With NFR Extra, we're going to take you behind the scenes in a way you've never heard before. Every 2 weeks, you're going to hear personal conversations with the icons and personalities that make up the world's richest and most prestigious rodeo. NFR Extra. All dirt, all rodeo, all year.
Hello, rodeo fans. Thanks for tuning in to our fifth episode of NFR Extra. I'm your host, Nevada Caldwell.
And this is Bo Gardner.
We catch up with rodeo announcer and pro rodeo Hall of Famer, Randy Corley.
Mr. Randy Corley.
Man, he's got a great voice. To talk pro rodeo world standings, current state of affairs, and his father-in-law, Hadley Barrett. Plus, as you can imagine, plenty of NFR.
Plenty of the Wrangler NFR. We also talk to the most famous barrel man in the sport of rodeo and all around showman, to say the least, Mr. Flint Rasmussen.
That's one talented guy. Maria hangs with 2015 world champ and 8-time NFR qualifier Jacobs Crawley as he talks about his journey from rookie of the year to becoming a world champ and how he's handling his new role.
PRC. A contestant director running the meetings.
That's a pretty big job, man.
Yes.
And I believe he works with us, too, for the NFR,
sure he
right?
does. Sure he does.
Gotta love that.
Hi, I'm Caleb Bennett, and this is NFR Extra.
Hi there. I'm Frank Thompson from Cheyenne Frontier Days, and you are listening to NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm Tyler Pearson, world champion steer wrestler, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm Cody Wright, 2-time world champion saddle bronc rider, and this is NFR Extra.
This is Bo's Bull, the rodeo news of the week.
Prior to his induction into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in 2017, Randy Corley had been selected PRCA Announcer of the Year.
12 times.
12. That's a lot. 12 times. He also had been an announcer at the National Finals Rodeo
16 times.
We're talking half of his career. Maybe more, maybe off, but that's
a lot.
He has
earned it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Corley has worked rodeos of all sizes, from Hill City, Kansas to San Antonio, Texas. He is still going strong working rodeos like Caldwell, Idaho,
Puyallup,
and Kitsap County, Washington. And we're pretty sure you can find him at the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo, too.
Yes.
No doubt about it.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, Randy.
Hey, nice to be on the show with you guys. It's unreal that it's taken me a while to get here, but I'm awful happy to be a part of it.
We are honored to have you on this show, sir.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
No doubt about it.
Hey, so we're going to jump right into this pretty quick. So, because we know you're a wealth of information, Mr. Corley, so we're going to jump right into some folks that a couple contestants that you probably have watched over the years, and we want to touch on, you know, Mr. Tim O'Connell and Mr. Casey Field, and if all goes well for these world champs, both of them could very easily jump back into the competition mid to late June. And Casey appears to be in a better position than Tim at this time to make it to the NFR. But what does Tim need to do, in your opinion, in order to make it back to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo in December?
You know, let me say something right off. He is such an aggressive. I remember before he won his first world title, he had gotten hurt and had to set out a good part of the middle of the season and didn't get back till August and still made it to the finals, even though he wasn't down as far as what he is right now and his injury wasn't as heavy an injury. I think right now that he carries all of the capabilities of getting this done. I think his biggest enemy is he is an overachiever. I know already by checking up on a few things that with his shoulder injury, with his rotator cuff and his labrum, that he went into too heavy of training and he locked everything up and set himself back already.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I think he's relocated out of Iowa down to Texas right now, he and his family. And he's there because there is a certain person, I think Tandy Freeman, lined him up with a massage therapist to help break down all of the scar tissue that had built up since the surgery so that he can get back to working out. But his plans, he's focused, and his plans are truly to be in the 4th of July season on that run. And he went over $100,000 last year after the 4th of July. So that's not, I mean, between the 4th of July and the NFR. So that's for him, that's not an impossibility.
Wow. That's a good point.
Because if he wins 85 or more, he'll for sure be in the top 15.
Oh, that'd
absolutely.
Be nice.
So he's in a tougher spot than most, but let me tell you, you know, he's going to have the luxury of entering as many rodeos as he wants to enter and counting every one of them. Because his rodeo count, they're allowed only so many, and his rodeo count's going to be nearly zero when he comes back, and he can count every single rodeo he goes to in the fall, summer and fall. That's so that'll be a big plus for him. Yeah, those are big.
You know, it'd be fun as having a camera for.
Well,
we are
all looking forward to that competition, so it should be very exciting.
You know what though? Yeah. Like, if you can imagine, like, a camera following him around. Let's say, for instance, everything works out for Tim, and I hope it does. You know, but to follow him along that way, because man, that is some work. It's already work being a cowboy, but I can imagine that. Wow.
Yeah, I mean his intensity level is good. He's real, but you know you can't be at the level that he or Casey Field are at without having that intensity level.
Isn't that the truth?
There's nothing negative in their thoughts whatsoever, ever.
Hey, speaking of that, we're talking you know, rodeos right now. Where were you at this past week? What's the most recent rodeo you were at, Randy?
I was at. It's a little town called Springville, California.
Nice.
If you come north out of Bakersfield, listening to Buck Owen music and smoking on a cigarette, let's get that all straight, and sucking down a cold Coors.
Oh,
anyway,
man.
You can't do that while you're driving, so don't anybody believe that. But if you come north about 45 miles out of Bakersfield, you'll be in a little town called Porterville. You turn as soon as you get to the first turn in Porterville. I think it's Highway 170. It goes up into the Sierra Nevadas. Just about 20 miles up into the mountains is the little town of Springville, California. If it ever got pushed on you, you have to move to California. That's not a bad place.
That's a spot. Yeah,
that's
pretty
nice up there.
You know, and it's probably pretty
like
green down there, right?
180 people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. They just lost all their poppies.
Oh.
But all of these mountainsides were just bright yellow.
That's right. The bloom is over there as well.
It was pretty cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Randy, you know, one thing we've heard about you from other announcers, from other folks in the rodeo industry, is that you come to the rodeo as one of the most organized and most prepared to announce the rodeo. So what process do you go through to get there?
Well, you know, and that's a funny thing to say. I mean, I do. And my mentor might have been one of the reasons. My wife will tell you that her dad, Hadley, and I overstudy.
Nice.
What I overstudy and what I truly digest sometimes don't always come out the same. If you can believe that. And if you think organized, last year at the Wrangler NFR, I think Roger Mooney was with us. Boyd's used to it. Wayne Brooks knows me real well. I do prepare everything, and I lay it out fairly neat, you know, in my notebook and papers I can pull out. But then I go to the meeting, like with Sean Davis, and you know where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I lay all these papers out, and I'm putting the new papers with them. And by the time I get to the announcer stand, there is not a single night out of 10 that I haven't left one of my important papers somewhere. And, you know, by about the fourth performance, Roger Mooney's just like, geez, how does he even get here, you know? But I always feel that it's better, almost better, if I ingest that stuff and then almost ad lib it. You know, it's a crutch. If I've got it laying there, it's a crutch. If I've written all these stats, I'll tell you one of the funnest things I do, and I do it at every rodeo, as far as the homework, minimum 3 hours.
Wow.
Before the rodeo, sometime in the day. But sure. Preparing for the national finals, it has become, and I think it's almost, I feel like it's something I have to do if I were chosen again. I go to Hawaii, either to Kona, Maui, or Kauai. I can't be in the sun. I have a terrible disease that's called erythropoietic protoporphyria. I cannot be in light.
Wow.
I'm like a vampire.
Nice.
But I don't like blood.
Yeah.
But anyway, I sit out on the lanai in the shade, and I do an event. I start 6, 7 in the morning, and by noon, I have done an entire event for the year for each cowboy qualifying to the NFR. I go there in October.
Man.
By the time a week has gone by, I've got all of my events done and ready to put into a notebook that I just work off of on the announcer stand. So I'm really wanting to write this off.
Yeah.
Because it is a work trip. I don't think my good friend Mr. Trump will allow me to do that.
What a tradition, though. How long have you been doing this?
About 7 years now.
Wow.
Just kind of.
I like that preparation process.
But it's relaxing. It's relaxing, too, you know. So.
Oh, that's absolutely. I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, we're still talking about rodeos. You know, you work rodeos of all sizes,
yes.
From Hill City, Kansas, to San Antonio, Texas. But there's one rodeo in particular that you do, and it's coined. And I like it, all these rodeos have the largest 3-day or the biggest outdoor, the biggest in the arena. Well, this one's coined the world's oldest rodeo. What is Prescott Frontier Days? What's it all about, claiming this? It's the oldest rodeo. Is it the format? What makes this thing so special to you?
I don't think it's the format. To me, all of it kind of comes together in the fact of historical, just thinking about Prescott, I think it was 1888 that they had their first rodeo. And I know, like, Pecos, Texas was 5 years or something ahead of that, where they had a gathering and things. But I think Prescott, Arizona was the very first rodeo to ever charge admission.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe even to put added money. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something along that line to be sure. One of those two or both. And they're continuous, but a few years of the war when everything kind of shut down. But, they still held their celebration. It just wasn't quite as heavy as it was the first and now.
Yeah.
But, no, they have just... I looked at some trophies, like... In their steer open in the early years, like about 1 minute and 22 seconds won it on a run. And I said, well, I think the deal is, this is how they tied the whole town together. The run started at the rodeo grounds out a little northeast, and you had to run that steer clear downtown to Whiskey Row. Then throw time and go in and have a drink. That's my theory of why it's the world's oldest. But they have that title, and what's funny is I get hammered by some rodeos. North Platte, Nebraska, you know.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
They the first rodeo, Buffalo Bill. And somebody asked me one time how I got away with it, and I said it was pretty simple, that whatever rodeo I was at that particular week, they were what they claimed to be because they were writing the check. So that was never a troublesome thing for me.
Well, since we're talking...
You know, Randy, you mentioned in an earlier comment, and you brought up a gentleman by the name of Hadley Barrett.
Yes.
Yes.
And, your father-in-law, obviously. What effect did he have on your rodeo career? And maybe you could share a few secrets with us.
So can I tell you, leading up to meeting Hadley, Bill Smith, who is a three-time world champion saddle bronc rider, Cody Bill, was going to start a nightly rodeo in North Platte, Nebraska. I was living in Cody, Wyoming at the time. I went to broadcast school in a year, went through the school, and I went to work in radio. But I picked a little station in Broken Bow, Nebraska, because I knew Bill Smith was going to start this nightly rodeo. And my idea was I would hound Bill Smith until he hired me. And I had no intention of making a living announcing rodeos, but I thought, you know, I could work in radio and do that nightly rodeo in the summer, still be connected to rodeo, something that I loved. And I did get the job, and I stayed with Bill. He had it for 2 years, and I stayed with him. And I didn't know Hadley Barrett. And I had no idea that Hadley Barrett lived in North Platte, Nebraska, because I didn't even know who he was. But at this nightly rodeo, Trent Barrett, who was Hadley's son, rode bulls and roped. He had a daughter, Michelle, who ran barrels. And he had another daughter, Kim, and I don't think she used to be a barrel racer, but she never came out to the nightly, really. I met her, you know, other ways. But Michelle, I always thought was kind of cute. And Hadley, now I became friends with Hadley. Michelle and Trent talked him into coming out and hearing me. And he did once, and then he came back a second time when I didn't know that he was there. And that was in 1980. He called me and asked if I'd be interested in getting my, and at the time it was the RCA still, I think, or right about the time they were changing, but my card. And I had, you know, I was kind of excited. I hadn't intended that, but so he signed for my card, and he taught me quite a bit about the right things to do. I think I mentioned a while ago the study habits. Not so much how to announce. I don't think he ever tried to talk me into that. He told me one time I was too proper, that I sounded like somebody that worked in radio. Well, I'd been to broadcast school. I was. So I relaxed it a little bit, but we became awfully good friends. Then I started dating his daughter. Well, if the deal was, guys, he had three kids, Trent and Kim and Michelle. Michelle's the middle.
Yep.
Trent was married. Kim was married. Michelle was not. Hadley did me a lot of favors. I owed him. So I went ahead and I will die for that. I know that someday. But I did marry Michelle, and it's the greatest thing I ever did. I didn't really owe Hadley any favors.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
he was big. You know what he taught me how to do and what I would pass along to anybody young? When you get started, you go in and you usually start at smaller rodeos like the Hill Cities or Phillipsburg's. And Phillipsburg's pretty good size. But the thing you do is you go into the town, and the first thing you do is you find out what print shop is doing the day sheets. And you make friends with them. You know, you go down and introduce yourself. And that's a good way to be able to get up the morning of the first perf and go down there, and they'll have a special copy made just for you so you can get it and go to work on it.
Yep.
You go over the names of the queens. And I mean, those are all things that are really important to that local committee. And so you've got to do it. But he taught me how to prepare more than anything. I really believe that.
It shows.
Wow.
Or actually, we hear it. Probably better way to say that.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so clearly you've announced the NFR plenty enough, 16 times, that you've seen many things during that time. And there's been some pretty special stuff that's happened in Vegas while the NFR has been here. And what's one of your, this just comes to mind, is there a favorite moment of yours that you've seen, and whatever it may be, with the announcers, with your teammates, with a cowboy out on the dirt.
Yeah.
Is there something that comes to mind when you think about a great moment that you've seen in the Thomas Mack Center?
There's just, you know, there's, I watched Cody Ole win the world when he couldn't walk. He got off his horse, tore his leg, tied his calf down, and then just fell backwards, and they had to pretty much carry him out. But he won the world by doing it, you know. I mean, that's just something unreal.
He tore that knee up.
You know, the first year that the finals went to Las Vegas was 1985. You know, I was pretty young. I'd got my card in 80. And they chose Phil Gardenhire and I to work that first year.
Nice.
And that'll always be pretty monumental to me. Phil and I were really good friends, both about the same age. And to get to do it together, our first times each, at the first time it was in Las Vegas. It was pretty cool. I did it that year, and I did it the year after that. And then I went to TV till about 90 or 91. And Phil was great, but I think the greatest thing that ever happened as far as the NFR, and I never thought it would happen. I'd already been to 10 of them by the time it did. In 2008, the 50th National Finals Rodeo, Bradley was chosen to work it with me. The only time, and I never thought it was going to happen, that I got to work the NFR with Hadley.
Oh, that's cool.
We are so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, that was the greatest thing that ever happened at the NFR for me.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, think about it. Like, no one else would know. I mean, I knew that you guys announced together, but as far as how special that means, that's all you.
Yeah.
And that's pretty fantastic. Also read, too, didn't you? I don't think it was NFR, but you've gotten to work with your daughter as well. Something with announcing?
That was another special thing. Yeah. She's a timer. She's a secretary now and won Secretary of the Year before last. But at the time, she was chosen to time the NFR. In fact, she did that a couple of times with me.
Man, that's cool.
So that was pretty cool, too. Yep. No, that was really cool. She is the one child that I have that kind of gravitated towards rodeo. I've got two daughters from a first marriage, and then Michelle and I have a daughter and a son, and all four kids are, you know, they're just wonderful together. And but Amanda, who is the second daughter of the first marriage, and that sounds pretty complicated. Anyway, she is the one that kind of went to rodeo, and I'm just awful proud of her, very proud of her. And we've had some nice things. My wife, Michelle, times for years in San Antonio, it was Michelle and Amanda timing the rodeo, Hadley and I announcing it. So
that's cool.
We just Keith Martin would call that the Corley Barrett family reunion.
There's a lot of tradition in the rodeo world, and you are a legend, my friend.
Yeah, no doubt about
it. Well, I've just been awful blessed, and Las Vegas has been so good to me, but the whole world of rodeo has been good to me, you know? So, yep.
Yeah, it has.
Just blessed.
So what's on the docket next, Randy? What's the next rodeo you're going to?
I've got to leave. We're going to head down tomorrow. The Rowell Ranch Rodeo in Hayward is another one of the, you know, not the biggest rodeo in the world, but they've been with me for 30 years. And I've always taken the spring and left it kind of open for trips and things, but kept just a couple of little rodeos, and they're great rodeos. So
that's cool.
That's a good part of it. And then I'm out to North Platte, Nebraska after that, and we're on the road again totally. Yeah,
I remember seeing you. We were in Puyallup a few years ago, and you were man of the meeting, and that was a great backdrop. Everything that's a pretty cool rodeo you get to be a part of.
Yeah, that is a fun, and it's getting better all the time. So yeah.
Very special. Well, this was we were talking to Flint earlier. He mentioned some components of the rodeo business. this was all family. This was a great interview of just kind of understanding your connection to, well, one of the godfathers of announcers with Hadley, and then
that's exactly what he is.
And there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, he'll make you smile.
Yeah.
You know, we did some.
We used to go on trips with Hadley. I'd put olives in my lower jaw, inside my lip, and I would do my Marlon Brando.
Hey, the Corleones.
You know, so Hadley, for you, was going to shoot me.
Well, it's a small group, so to get into that.
Hey, it's all in the family.
Yeah,
all in the
absolutely.
Family. That's right.
Well, Randy, thanks for joining us. This was fantastic. I know we're going to be bringing back you on. Like I said, we're trying to keep it moving where we keep the conversation very fluid as we head towards the NFR. So, you know, good luck out on the road. Be safe. Enjoy your summer. And thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Yes, we look forward to seeing you out there.
Very good. Thank you guys doing what you do.
For more information about the world standings and the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo, visit NFRExperience.com.
Follow the NFR Extra podcast by visiting NFRExperience.com, NFRExtra.Vegas, and now on Spotify, Google Play, and SoundCloud.
Hi, I'm 23-time world champion cowboy Trevor Brazil, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm Boyd Paul Hamus, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm Rusty Wright, and this is NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm Louis Messina, and you listen to NFR Extra.
Known as the most famous barrelman in the sport of rodeo, Mr. Flint Rasmussen regularly entertains thousands of the professional bull rider fans with physical stunts and envy. Have you seen this guy dance?
I've seen the flopping fish.
And his jokes during the lulls in the competition. Mr. Rasmussen also works to include local and national topics into his routine. But what we love Flint for is what he brings to Cowboy Christmas on the Rodeo Houston live stage. He brings and interviews athletes and country stars and actors and comedians. And tell you what, his live version of Cowboy Christmas and his show Outside the Barrel, it is the highlight.
There's not an empty seat in the house.
There is not. I tell you, this guy every year in December has been with us for how long, Envy? 20 plus years, right?
Easily, yeah. The stages in the back 20 years ago didn't look as cool as they do today.
No, they got it made, right? So anyway, folks, Mr. Flint Rasmussen.
Well, thanks, fellas. And it's finally, I'm sure you've done a few of these shows, so I'm glad you finally got the most famous person on it. I'm a big git. I'm glad I could squeeze you in.
There was quite a few agents we had to get through to get to this point. So, yes, you're right.
My people, your people called my people, which means Bo called me. That's what I mean.
You know, we've always saved our best interviews for when we have a few more people listening. And thanks to our marketing team in Nevada there, we are very content with where we are, but we know this is going to go a long way. So, Flint, sir, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I'll try to shed light and say something real deep.
Nice. We need that.
Well, we want to get you started, right? And we know, I mean, dude, you've been doing Cowboy Christmas and Outside the Barrel for a long time, mm-hmm. over 20 years, right?
I'll tell you, it's getting close to 20. I'll go 16, 17, right in there. Yeah, we're getting close.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah.
So you've interviewed a wide range of people on Outside the Barrel. So we got to ask, you know, you've been through a wide variety. What is one of your favorite interviews that you can remember, bad or good? You can go either way. Tell us a story either way.
Well, you don't have enough time. When you're interviewing rodeo cowboys, there are some bad. Not personality-wise, but, man, like pulling teeth sometimes. But, you know, it's funny because I've looked back on who's been on. You know, Taylor Swift was on the week before her 17th birthday. She was wonderful, had one hit out, and 3 years later, I took my girls backstage to meet her, and she remembered me. hugged me and was so glad to see me. I've had respect for her ever since. Became friends with Larry the Cable Guy kind of through that. But, you know, as far as really good interviews, I mean, you can't go wrong with Wayne Newton. We've had Wayne Newton on the show twice. Really? And there is not a nicer, kinder man. And my friend Kurt Blake, who helps with my show. And he always meets their cars, tells them where their driver should drop them off backstage in the back door of where Cowboy Christmas is. And the big black SUV pulled up, and Kurt went and knocked on the window for the drive, talked to the driver, and the window rolled down, and the guy reached out and said, "Wayne Newton, nice to meet you." He drove himself there, him and his wife. So I just was amazed. I felt like I was doing him a favor. I just was amazed the guy, Mr. Vegas, like Wayne Newton, was that kind, you know? And something a little more timely, because it's such a tragedy, but I kind of got to be friends with Luke Perry. Yeah. And Luke was on the show. And, you know, of course, Lane Frost in the movie 8 Seconds. And he had come and watched a couple PBRs where I worked. And so he was just so gracious. And he was a fan of mine, which is always humbling. But he just amazed me that just a down-to-earth guy. And here's a guy that was Hollywood, you know, star 90210, movie star. But he's so identified with regular fans. Our people took him in. You know, people from Shoto, Montana, or wherever, Nebraska. Luke Perry's a cowboy. I mean, he's one of us. Yeah. And he identified with that. And when he showed up to my show, he looked like Lane Frost. I mean, no doubt. And so, I mean, those are a couple that really made a difference to me. And now losing Luke Perry, it just is, you realize what a guy he was. And I'll say this, when it comes to cowboys, like rodeo contestants on my show that are great interviews, Trevor Brazil, of course, is always good. There's some good ones. But I'll say this.
He's polished, isn't he? He's really
super polished.
Oh, he is. Yeah, media polished and nice guy, sincere. Yeah. But let me tell you, there's two guys that could have their own show, Jacobs and Sterling Crawley. Let me tell you something. Those guys are hilarious. So they rank right up there with guys. My mother watches so she said, "Oh, those two little farts could have their own show." those are ones that stand out that I really remember.
You know, we work with
the, we got him on this show, right?
Yeah, we do. And you know, we worked with Jacobs, you know, obviously when he won in 15, the way we do our marketing, we try to gather up all the champs as much as we can and put them front and center in our programs, our posters, all of our marketing assets. And so he was one of them that came with us to the Pioneer. It's a very old bar outside of Las Vegas, right by Prim. And man, that guy was about as pure entertainment as we needed out there. And it was just us. It was a couple of folks from the LVE office, South Point. And man, you're right, Flint. He has a button and it's just go. But it's intelligent, yeah. Like kind of like in the way he does things. He's very smart.
He's, yeah, he's a smart
guy.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, super
smart.
Yeah,
he
smart.
Is. And he looks like Ed Sheeran. So there you go. Can't go wrong. Double whammy.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's something else. So we're talking about Cowboy Christmas, one of the things that you're very well known for, and that's what you do at PBR. And as we know here in Las Vegas, both PBR and PRCA have their finals take place in Las Vegas every year. What makes it so special in Las Vegas to have the hearts and everyone that loves what they do within the rodeo business or bull riding or whatever it is within the Western lifestyle? What makes Vegas so important to the Western lifestyle fan?
Well, I always, you know, I've heard a lot of stories, but I always try to put myself, you know, in the know or present back when, I mean, what a culture shock for the National Finals Rodeo to move from Oklahoma City to Las Vegas. I mean, I think we kind of take it for granted now that, you know, Las Vegas is the home of the NFR. It's been the home of the PBR finals since it started.
Yep.
So that's a little more, but can you imagine the culture shock and you know, the good old rodeo fans, and they said, "We're going to Vegas." How out of their element could those deep-rooted rodeo fans be than Las Vegas? You couldn't have picked a place that was more off the grid as far as they were concerned than Las Vegas. And I think that's a little of the appeal. You know, the NFR, there's hundreds of thousands of people that come to the NFR in Vegas with not one intention of ever having a ticket to the rodeo. I mean, it's people it's true, isn't it? I mean, we had however many thousands of people get it through the doors of Cowboy Christmas every day.
Oh, man.
And they're not going to the rodeo. They're going to the South Point in the showroom, or they're going to a viewing party here, a viewing party there, or the Mirage afterwards to see people sing. I think that's part of the appeal is I think cowboys have now become assimilated and associated with Las Vegas. But there's a lot of people, you know, I talk to a lot of people in Montana. I've never been to Vegas. Like, it's easy to get to. It's not a real city. It's an amusement park. it's easy to get around, hop in a taxi, hop in an Uber. Everybody's in the same boat. But I think the appeal is you're taking people from middle of nowhere, Nebraska or South Dakota or Wyoming, and you're throwing them all together in Vegas, and it transforms Vegas. And I think Vegas likes to be transformed as much as the Cowboys like to be transformed into Vegas. It's a two-way street. And there's an energy. See, I thrive in Vegas. Like, when I get to Vegas, I get an energy, and I probably work harder at the 6 days of the PBR finals and the 10 days at the NFR harder than I do all year, but I thrive there because there's such an energy that you feed off everyone else, and it's contagious, and people are happy, and they're not whining about things, and they're not worried about the weather, and it's just, here, let me entertain you. And they're there to be entertained, and it's lights and it's music, and I don't know, it's my kind of deal. Man, there's a lot of people out of their element at that damn place.
I think that's what makes it special. You know, Vegas it focuses on a little hospitality. I think the cowboy, cowgirl, however you want to define it, is hospitable, right? And they kind of meet in that middle. And how it kind of works for both ways. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. They're definitely out of their element. Man.
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
So, Clint, you know, we want to know, how did you get involved in the Western lifestyle? I mean, we all know your dad was a rodeo announcer. Mm-hmm. But we want to know just, you know, how he impacted you. Is he the one that got you into rodeo? Or have you ever even announced a rodeo? Kind of tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, it is. That's how my family kind of got into it. My dad was a rodeo guy, and then he started announcing rodeos in the 70s and had a family, so he never really he was asked and had the opportunity to join the PRCA and be a PRCA announcer, but just decided to stay in Montana, regional rodeos. We went to the Northern Rodeo Association. That's all the rodeos we went to in Montana, and every summer we'd load up every weekend in a pickup and camper or whatever it was, had an old motorhome and go to rodeos all over Montana in little towns. And, you know, my brother, who went into radio and now is a great rodeo announcer, was nominated as for announcer of the year in the PRCA last year. I'll make, as I like to say, long story longer. I went to these rodeos. So I grew up, like my mom always says, I grew up on the steps of an announcer stand, watching what went on behind the scenes, watching the timing of how a show went, what was important, what wasn't. If it's a champion coming up, the clown should step aside. I remember my dad always saying, if there's a cowboy hurt, the clown shouldn't do anything. There's nothing funny about it, you know? So it was those little things I took in. But when I was in school and in high school, I was an athlete. I was a all-state football player, all-state in track, started on the basketball team.
Nice.
But I was in music and drama stuff. I had this weird combination of what I did in school. But the summer after my freshman year of college, I'm sitting at the dinner table with my dad, and my brother Will was there, who was already announcing rodeos. And I said, you know, why do these rodeo clowns, they're just doing the same stuff as when I was 5 years old. They're telling the same old jokes. They're, you know, boy, if I was a rodeo clown, I'd get the crowd involved and I'd do this. Basically was running my mouth. And so they dared me to do it. And those little rodeos, you know, and we had some clout with some committees. And my brother Will was a couple weeks from that time announcing the rodeo in Superior, Montana, which is west of Missoula, little tiny town. Called him up and said, hey, my brother Flint's pretty funny. And I always was entertaining. he's going to want to come clown this rodeo. And I worked for free. So that was great. And
hey, MB, we're doing it for free, right?
Yep, there we go.
Right. So I did that. That was like the summer of 1987-ish. Then the next summer, a guy hired me to do his rodeos around Montana. And then some more. And then someone else called. You know, the whole story of how it just builds and builds and builds. And joined the PRCA in 1994. I was in with a guy named Jerome Robinson, who's going in the Hall of Fame this year, who was ground level at producing a lot of the PBR events, was doing rodeos, PBRs at the same time, transitioned eventually into just PBR. So it was a long road. It took me 20 years to be an overnight success, or whatever the saying is. But, and I'm trying to think, I think what happened was my dad was announcing a rodeo somewhere. My brother Will promised to announce a junior rodeo in Augusta, Montana. Then he got something else. So, yes, I did announce a junior rodeo one time, and I was terrible. But I could do it now. I don't think I want to. But I used to, but in college I announced, and after that, I was the PA public address announcer for the basketball and football games.
Oh, those are awesome.
So I have done all that. So there you go. Long story. Yeah.
Beautiful. Right. Lindsay, I think you got another question for Mr. Flint Rasmussen.
Yeah. So, you know, watching your show, by the way, I don't think there's ever an empty seat for your show at Cowboy Christmas. I mean, it is fully attended. Everyone's fully, you know, fully focused on you, and you put on a great show. I mean, I've been with LVE 5 years. I've been watching it. I don't want to say every day, but I watch it, and it's always special. And you know, the way that you treat the guests, and even things where I've seen, you know, some people didn't have seen these, and actually we put it out on our social. But I'll bring up a sad moment, but with Daryl Singletary, there was a moment that you guys sang that I grabbed. You were actually coming off your show, Flint, and you guys sang his song, Amen. Yeah. And you know that when I saw that, I was like, man, Flint is on another level. You know, you're able to mold into a situation, and that's important. You're a big representative of this business, and I think you carry it well.
Well,
and,
let me tell you, you know what? I'll tell you something. And you said something about the way I treat my guests. There's certain people I watch. One of my favorites, and then I'll let you ask your question, but it reminded me of something. My favorite show, and it's a TV and radio show, is the Dan Patrick Show.
Yes.
Dan Patrick is an amazing interviewer. And the one thing he has, he is friends with, like, Adam Sandler, Mark Wahlberg, those kind of – Will Ferrell and him are great friends. Oh, yeah. But then the athletes, too, Reggie Miller. And he brings all these people on, and they call him by name. Hey, thanks, Dan. You know, thanks for giving me a call. There's this respect that he has earned from those guys. And I have really tried to get that. Like when I call cowboys or whatever, I hope they know. And I've been told, hey, we like coming on your show because we know how you treat us. And it's respectful, but it's conversational. You know, so that means a lot to me. And that's been a goal of mine. And it kind of came from watching guys like Dan Patrick who earn that respect, and they do earn it, you know, and work hard for it.
Yep.
Because guests know they'll be treated well. And I hope that's what I do.
Well, and because you treat them well, they're going to open up, they're going to share stuff. And you know, you've gave them kind of that confidence to speak, you know, cause you're of your approach. I mean, and that's a big job of what you do. So, and you do it really well. So, yeah. Which leads into this question. So you have some very special guests. We've kind of touched on a little bit ago, but how do you go about, like, what's the strategy behind inviting guests on the show? I mean, is there a tactic? Is there not? You just line them up and say, you know, you're on day two, day three.
Kurt Blake.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. I'll tell you. I have Kurt Blake, myself and Kurt Blake. So you're talking about myself, from guy from Chota, Montana, and Kurt Blake, who is who knows what he is. He's a contractor. He owns a huge liquor store in Laramie, Wyoming, lives out in the boonies in Centennial, Wyoming. But I knew when I got him to help me, he can do anything, and he's not afraid to call anybody. So what we do, honestly, is, so Kurt does a little research. He has some contacts, and who's in town? That's the big thing with the talent part of it, like country music singers or comedians. Who's in town? And he'll reach out to them. And I will handle more of the cowboy side of it. So what we do is we float emails back and forth, starting about a month and a half. I always say, I got to get through the PBR finals first, but now the PBR finals is later, so I got to start earlier. Yeah. But we look at who's in town. We have, you know, he'll call and say, hey, I heard from, we have people get a hold of us. Hey, I got a call from such and such, wondering if we could get him on the show. And like I always tell Kurt, you might like it, but my name's on the sign. So I kind of have final say, but so that's one side of it. Cowboy wise, honestly, I will go through the contestant list, and, you know, rodeo cowboys aren't on TV very much.
Yes.
You know, that's just a sad fact. So you kind of got to make a guess how you know them and what their story is, of which contestants, a couple every day, will fit good on the show. Of course, we have the standbys, the Crawley brothers, the Trevor Brazils, the Casey Fields. I've learned, like, Tyler Irwin is a steer wrestler. He's really good. There's some guys that are excellent. You just try to pick some guys who have a good story and can convey that story to the audience. You know, they have great personalities. A Luke Franquino, for example. Mm-hmm. Sherry Servey is a very interesting person. So luckily, too, we've established some friendships early in their career, and now they're kind of go-to guests and are kind enough to still come on the show. 5-6 years ago, a little-known country singer named Cody Johnson came on, and nobody knew who he was.
Yep. Yeah.
And now he gets 75,000 people in Houston, and his people and himself are kind. If they are free to do it, they'll come on Flint's show.
Nice.
So, kind of cool.
Do you see a fluctuation in your attendance and stuff when you've got those contestants that you just named off? I mean, is there, you know, kind of tell us what you see as far as your audience and the reaction from your audience when they know who's on your show?
They do, and I don't know, you know, if there's a lot of people come to the show, I don't know if they care. You know, because they know it'll be fun either way. But boy, if word gets out that Cody Johnson's there and Wayne Newton, I'll never forget Wayne Newton sitting up there, and instantly, as soon as he walked on stage, because it's a free show and you can come and go as you wish. Right. When Wayne Newton sat on that couch, attendance skyrocketed.
I think we had to hire security.
You know what, though? Interesting point is, and Bo, you kind of came into the picture, when we were a little bit established, but even when you and I started dealing with each other, it was a novel concept. It was, back in the day, trade shows were, it was just shopping. And that was our philosophy on it, was let's give people an hour of some entertainment. And it was new, and it was something for people. And so when I call cowboys to be on this show, they go, now, what are you doing? Well, it's like a talk show. It's like Leno. And they go, oh, we'll be there. Well, now, in true rodeo fashion, everybody's got a damn show.
Oh, yeah.
Ain't that the truth?
There's a show at every trade show there. And so Cowboys, I believe, have spread themselves too thin with the autograph, quote unquote, autograph signing sessions for sponsors. Yeah. It's hard to get Cowboys. Hey, can you be on my show on such and such date? Well, let me check. I'm on a couple others, and then I got to sign for this sponsor. Well, sponsors should realize you can either set your cowboy in a director's chair or at a table in front of your booth and have him sign 25 autographs, or you can send him and let the to my show and let the people really get to know his personality and become fans of that guy. And look at how much better it is for you. That's opinionated, but I don't know. You know, in national television, I don't know. It has become harder and harder to get Cowboys, and good for the rodeo business and NFR for having a lot of shows, but it's made it hard for sure. It's become pretty difficult. Yeah.
Well, you know, you have such an array of talent in Las Vegas, whether they are rodeo contestants or musicians, or just legends, and you know them all, Flint, and that's what makes your show so great, with Kurt Blake's assistance and with you and your personality, and they all know you, and they're all used to laughing and joking with you, and so it's just a great hour of entertainment.
Well, that's a great touch.
I hope that regardless of who the guests are, I hope the guests are comfortable and the people will come because I'm entertaining also. I think the host has to be fun as well. I mean, look at the popular shows, Fallon and, back in the day, Letterman and Leno, Johnny Carson. I remember as a kid, much like now, I had trouble sleeping and I sneak partway down the stairs and look through the banister of the stairway. And my parents would be watching Johnny Carson, and I'd watch Johnny Carson with him. And I just idolized him as a little kid. And so that's where a lot of this comes from. I always wanted to do that. He was entertaining.
He was the best.
You know,
man.
We have one more quick question for you. You know, the fame that you've established, we hear there's a rumor out there. How do we get a hold of a Flint Rasmussen action figure? We heard you have one.
For a while, if you go in these like farm and ranch stores, you know, once in a while you can see the Flint action figure with a full set of stuff. So I don't even know if I have one. I will say this. Let me tell you guys, I just noticed something. I'm sitting in my place right now, and on the TV stand, on the bottom shelf, I splurged just one time. And I have a Flint bobblehead on my bottom
nice.
Right now. It is. He's looking at me, giving me the thumbs up right now.
Oh, man, please don't say awesome. Bobblehead. Our boss has a thing for bobbleheads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's sitting here. He thumbs up, nodding his head at me right now.
We're giving away bobbleheads at the first 100 people of this show on day one of Flint show at Cowboy Christmas.
That's right.
Well, man, this was awesome, Flint. Thank you. Like this, great talk. You know, seriously, getting to know you, we hear you always interviewing and talking to people, but this was good to hear you and talk about your backdrop. And little did you know when you were sitting at the steps while your dad was announcing that, you know, where you would be today, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure you weren't thinking about that, but it's pretty awesome that you're here. I'm pretty sure your dad's proud of you. So.
I put in my 2 years teaching school and thought I'd give it a try, and that was in about 1993 that I tried her full time, and here we are.
Yeah.
So, how much longer are you going to try, man?
I don't know. I figured I'd be done by 41, 42. Honestly, I'm 51 years old, and it's harder to get prepped and get excited mentally. Probably than physically.
Sure.
I can see that.
But I've been running and trying to stay in good shape, maybe milk a couple more years out of this, and hopefully some opportunities come up that I can transition into. But if you'd have told me that I'd be doing this in the places I'm doing it and frankly, and making the money I make, I'd have called you crazy, but I found a little niche, and it's worked out okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, Flint, what you do for the PBR is definitely a much larger job than what we offer you at Cowboy Christmas with Outside the Barrel. So even if you do decide to retire with the PBR, we hope that you stay on board with us.
Please.
Well, that's me too. I want to raise because that's going to be maybe my only income.
Well, the right people listen to this episode or to this podcast, so you're good there.
There you go. Yeah, I'm taking calls. I will receive your calls. Yeah.
Well, sir, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Hey guys, no, I appreciate the call. It's a blast. Love doing it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Enjoy your summer.
We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
For more information about Cowboy Christmas, visit NFRExperience.com.
Hi, this is Derek Stevens. I'm the owner and chief executive officer of the D Las Vegas, and this is NFR Extra.
Good afternoon. My name is Cotton Ross from Marysville, California. Welcome to NFR Extra.
Howdy, I'm Bob Tallman, and this is NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm world champion Ryder Wright, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
You're listening to NFR Extra Podcast. All dirt, all rodeo, all year. Maria hangs out with the 2015 world champ, an 8-time NFR qualifier, and a newly added title of the PRCA contestant director, Mr. Jacobs Crawley. This was recorded live at Cowboy Christmas on December 11th in 2018.
And welcome to NFR Extra, where it's all dirt, all rodeo, all year. I'm here with world champion saddle bronc rider Jacobs Crawley. I just like to say that.
Okay.
Like that.
I've been saying it for a few years too, so it's all right.
Yeah. Just a few.
Yeah, I know.
All right, let's start. 2015, you were the world champion saddle bronc rider. What's it mean that, you know, when you see Jacobs Crawley, world champion?
Yeah, the world champion, whenever I got that title, that was probably the nicest part about it was once you have it, it can't, you know, it's nothing they can take away. So it's like, hey, this is pretty cool. And the last couple of years, that's where I've set the goal and come up just short of it, you know. And well, it's one of those things that it's no matter how many you win, you're always going to want the next one. You know what I mean? I'm like I said, I can only speak as a guy that's only had one, but I want the second one just as bad, you know. And It's everybody's goal is to get that gold buckle, so it's really special. It means a lot. 2015, that was a big year for me. My wife and I got married. We kind of started that whole thing, won the gold buckle. It was like, oh my goodness. And so it just reminds me of that year, and it's just it's a really happy spot in my memory bank.
In your memory bank?
Yeah.
When they gave that to you on stage and you're on the TV and you're about to talk, is that when it sunk in or after you found out you won it?
No. Like a month and a half afterwards. Because like I was always afraid they're gonna call me and take it back. And they're like, hey, we actually got to looking over some of these sheets. We did an audit and you're not the world champion. And I was like, oh my gosh.
No, Sonny Depp got it right.
Yeah. And so anyways, I was really happy like as we were into the 2016 season, because I was like, they're still calling me the world champion. We're still doing this. And I was like, all right, so we're just going to keep riding this wave. And so it took a little bit of time. I couldn't believe everything. Like in the back of my mind going into the 10th round, I kind of knew like, oh my goodness. Like I looked at the numbers and stuff and I was like, kind of know what I need to do for this to work out. And then like after the go round, I was like, it just totally worked out. And then I was still like, was looking around like, where's the catch? But so it's been a great ride.
I love it. So, world champion, tell me about how you got started in saddle bronc riding, and when was that moment where you're like, were you 3, were you 10, and you're like, I need to be a world champion?
Yeah, so we grew up rodeoing from Texas, so it was like rodeo and football, and it was calf roping and football. But my uncle rode rough stock, so he was putting us on calves, steers, bulls. He was good friends with Tuff Hedeman. And so Tuff, we kind of grew up with Tuff as almost like an uncle, and he'd put me on steers. And when you're a little kid and you're like, we weren't the kids that like just craved it, because we were like 8, 9 years old getting on bucking dudes and getting our butts bucked off. And but it was good because they pushed us out of our comfort zone. And it led us to enjoy rough stock, and we always loved roping, riding horses. And then whenever we got 15 or 16, I tried saddle bronc riding to win the all-around. and high school rodeo and stuff. And I was like, wow, this is kind of both ends of it. This is a little bit more horse, but still the rough stock side. And I'm totally not sore as much as I am when I'm getting on bulls. So this is great how I feel great after getting on a few bucking horses. And so I just worked out that direction. And then we figured out we were pretty good at it. So we just stuck with it.
Well, talk about your college career. You were also the college national finals champion. I believe I might have interviewed you way back when.
We've known each other for a minute now because we did remember doing that interview. And we were, like I said, that was great. That was 2011 at A&M. That was another goal of mine, was to get my college degree from Texas A&M. I'm a third generation Aggie.
Woo!
So that meant a lot to me, you know. And my dad is an engineer. His dad studied and everything like that. So, and it also kind of let me have a way to kind of develop as a bronc rider, because it's not something that's in our family. It's not. We were kind of the first guys to rodeo, and then we enjoyed rough stock, so we kind of started trying saddle bronc, and it's been kind of a trial and error learning process. And so it took some time, and I didn't know I wanted to be a bronc rider until I was like, I can make a living getting on bucking horses and having fun with my friends. So we just looked up, and I was ready to go to work after college. And I made my NFR my senior year, and I was like, just gonna keep riding this wave. So I'm just, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So it's been great.
What'd you study in college?
Systems engineering.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah, I enjoyed math. So I went to the one with the most math, the most strongest math emphasis. And I started at Tarleton. And for a year or two, kind of to get my feet wet, and then I transferred to A&M and finished up there, and was there 2.5 years. And so,
what is systems engineering?
It's basically like an efficiency engineer. Like you just go through and it's like kind of cutting costs and things like that. So you look at a system, and then through math equations, you make everything work better. So that's kind of a lot of consulting firms, project manager type stuff. I wanted to be a project manager. And over big jobs and put everything together. And so now I'm the bronc riding director, and now I get to do that in the rodeo way.
But it's
just looking at horses and putting horses together. So it's fun. And yeah, hopefully someday I'll go to work in something like that, because I still love the idea of getting to work in that way.
Well, saddle bronc riding, you love it.
But right now, I'm all in on bronc riding. I'm all in.
You are, and I love that you're kind of using your degree in the rodeo industry as well. But let's go back to college finals and college rodeo. The finals is big. How does that get you ready for something like the NFR?
Yeah, the college national finals is really, it's kind of a pressure cooker in its own way, because you get just a couple rounds and then the finals, and that's it, you know? So. You really can't have any stumble along the way. You got to kind of, and you only get 4 years, you know, regardless, you know, and it all just worked out my senior year. But yeah, there's pressure in every way, and especially in that short round. And at that point in most guys' career, that's the biggest stage that you've been on. So it you definitely felt the pressure big time. And it was another, I think I was so young, we were so excited that we didn't even know what was going on, me and my brother, whenever we were there, because we had started rodeoing that year professionally, full time, and it was his rookie year, so we were just blind, running, you know, just as fast as we could, having a ball, so it all just worked out great.
Well, your brother Sterling is also here at the NFR as a qualifier. You guys, college rodeo, you traveled. I interviewed you years ago at college rodeo, and you had a converted ambulance.
Yes.
That you were traveling in. What happened to that?
So the ambulance, we rodeoed 2 full years in the ambulance. And then we got tired of being broke down in the ambulance and having other vehicles to back us up. So we sold the ambulance to a friend of ours, the gentleman that owns Huey, and Ruffy, a buddy of ours, our sponsor. And so he converted it to the Jambulance. So now, at like music festivals and stuff like that, he'll go park the ambulance, and people will plug in, they'll play music, and it'll be kind of a hangout, how it always has been, but now it's like professional singers instead of us. But I mean, I guess, you know.
Wait, you sing?
Who's biased? Oh yeah, we yell. We make a lot of racket. Yeah, so we have a big time. But so it's really cool that she's still out there in the same way, and it's actually here in Vegas. It's at the Tropicana, the bullfights out there. They've got some bullfights going on, and so it's parked, and they have music daily plugged into the Jambulance. So She still runs. She still makes a trip once a year. I wouldn't advise taking it out of Texas more than once a year.
So let's go back to singing. What was your favorite song to sing, and can we hear a few bars?
Absolutely not, because it's noon and I'm mic'd up, and you're all way too sober. But singing song choice, it changes all the time. So my little boy is a year old. And so I don't know if you've heard the song Faces, Ooh La La, that I wish that I knew what I know now when I was younger. That song?
No, sing a little bit more.
Lead me into this. I mean, come on now. I know you know that song if yes. I just said the words. But the lyrics are really fun. And he's a little boy, and it talks about watching out for girls and stuff like that. Like, if you really dig into the lyrics. So not to mention the cool sound, that is my favorite song to sing right now, because I sing it to him, and I've got an older guitar that I just set in front of him and let him slap on and stuff like that, so it's really cool.
And you play guitar and sing.
So yeah, you gotta entertain yourself when you're rodeoing, so I have found. We have a lot of spare time, and we enjoy that. We enjoy, whenever we get to rodeos, we cook out, and we play music, and that's about it. So, yeah.
And you're still traveling with Sterling,
yeah.
Jordy?
Yeah, that'll never be a thing that changes, probably. I think we're stuck in this for life. It's a good thing. My wife and my little boy do come out, though, a lot. So we've got two rigs. So I've got the rig that I'm with Sterling and then the rig that I'm with them. And they don't go to all of them. They just kind of go to, like, the big ones, and they stay there for, like, 4 or 5 days, like, be it Cheyenne or something like that. And me and Sterling will go run off over here and then come back. So that kind of – they kind of stay around the home base and make their way, and me and Sterling zip around in the Sprinter van now.
So how has having a family and a little one changed your life and your outlook on rodeo?
Rodeo was always way up there on the list of things, you know, priorities, and now it's dropped a few pegs. But you know, it's life. It's like anything. You know, when you're young and it's what you do and it's what you're excited about, it kind of, it's up there, you know. And now with the family, it just ching ching ching. But it's still up there. It's still great, and you love every minute of it. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, we're faith first and then family kind of bunch. And so it's those two things right there. If I'm straight with my faith and my family and my little boy and my wife are good, life's good. So we're having fun. And then right after that, I want to win every rodeo that I go to. So
it's still up there.
It's still up there, but it's just, she's shuffled down a little bit.
Talk to me a little bit about being here with your brother Sterling at the NFR and you guys helping each other and encouraging each other, and how important is that?
Oh, it's huge. And the reason it is because we've rodeoed together our whole life. You know, so like he was in calves when I was in steers, you know, and so we've always, and he's roping breakaway and I'm tie down or whatever it may have been. And so it just, you know, it's like we work at it all year. That's who I rodeo with, my primary guy I rodeo with. So at the end of the year, when you look up and you're in the locker room with your hauling partner, your brother, arguably one of your best friends, you know, it just means that, hey, this was a successful year. And, you know, it's just kind of that tip of the hat, sigh of relief, like, hey, we did it again. You know, January will be here, let's get back to work. But, I mean, let's enjoy this for now.
And the NFR here in Vegas, what's one of your favorite things about it, and how are you all treated?
About it being in Vegas? My wife and I enjoy, like, the restaurants and everything like that, and going out and kind of the nightlife type thing, you know, and not a different nightlife than maybe 8 years ago whenever we first came around to Las Vegas. But now I don't gamble a whole lot. I'll play around a little bit, but you know, we enjoy going to places that we wouldn't typically get to go to and enjoying things that we typically wouldn't get to. So it gives us an environment of that to where I can work, and then we can do that and catch rest throughout the day a little bit, and then do it all over again. And then after 2 weeks, you're ready to go home for a little bit. Yeah.
Well, and it's grueling. You have to get on 10 of the best bucking horses 10 nights in a row. I mean, how do you do that?
You know, it's really not that bad, because usually you think about it, in the summertime, whenever we're rodeoing similar to that, you mix in 10-hour drives in between there. So it's like, the fact that you're in one spot and you're not in a car right now and you're stretching around, you're walking around, you're doing different stuff, you know, it. I feel like it's way easier on your body than it is in typical summer. But I will say that, like, if something happens early in the NFR and you're dealing with an injury starting from the beginning and working your way through, then it can get pretty tough. But if you just kind of get by and you're, you know, typical bumps and bruises, the 10 days, and I'm also saying this as a saddle bronc rider, not a bareback, not a bull rider. So let me emphasize that point. I'm in the saddle bronc riding business, and in our deal, you know, it's pretty smooth for 10 days, you know, as long as you, like I said, can avoid the serious stuff early.
Well, I know that to avoid that, you stay in shape, and to make your bronc riding better, what's your typical workout routine?
So at home, in the bronc riding, the biggest thing, and it's like anything, it's just more of a body weight kind of strength, you know, like we're not big in like how big can you get or how muscled up can you get so much as, you know, do you have endurance, are you flexible, you know, can you handle your body weight? And so I don't get too buried down as much as anything as I do just making sure that I sweat really hard every day that I go to the gym kind of deal. And out here, you kind of get into riding shape. You know, after five rounds, like I'm probably not going to go work out anymore throughout the week, but I'll stretch every morning and stuff like that. And the biggest thing is stretching, just because you start getting so tight, and you know, even though you're not in a car, you can kind of get cramped up because you're either sitting or you're doing something else, you know, still. And so it a little bit of that goes a long way. And not everybody has to do that, and you can get by, but it seems to help me, and that's all I can really worry about.
So you arrive at the Thomas and Mack. Take me through what goes on before you get on that horse.
So we get there pretty early. We get to the Thomas Mack pretty early, and then I'll go and post like the previous scores and from the night before for the horses and some of the stuff that the director, I'll take care of my director responsibilities for about the first hour from about 5 to 6 or so. And then we all just hang out, all the bronc riders. We just sit around the locker room, shoot the bull, kind of go through the day, kind of like a lounge type atmosphere, drink coffee or whatever. And then about 6:30, everybody's getting kind of stretched and ready to roll. And then it's Viva Las Vegas, and we head to get on the grand entry horses. And then it's just rodeo mode from there. So
how could the grand entry is so cool. I mean, everyone gets on a horse. It's amazing. Sometimes you see some of the riders, it's like, well, they can't really ride a normal horse.
Right. And you're like, that's why they ride bulls. Yeah.
Exactly. So, no offense. Not to throw them under the bus. But what's that like with all the fans screaming and you're out there, you know, with everyone?
Well, the Grand Entry is really fun. And the Grand Entry, it's even more fun when you have a good Grand Entry horse. So one of the more important draws of the NFR is, what did you draw for the Grand Entry? So there's been years where I've had a horse that, I mean, you just want to grab it up, but you can't. You got to just be real easy and stuff like that. And this year I drew a great horse, Jeffrey. Jeffrey has been outstanding. Like I said, I've had horses that they just want to rear up the whole time when you're trying to hold them in place, and it makes it really nice when you don't have to worry about your grand entry horse. You can just worry about your bucking horse instead of your grand entry horse.
Okay, that's hilarious. I've never heard that in all
the years. It is a true statement. There's a lot of horse swapping. So like early, if you draw a horse and you're noticing that like this isn't going to be good for 10 days, you'll see guys start trying to change out their horses and stuff like that. And yeah, you gotta. If you got a good one, you're gonna have to watch it because you might get her nabbed up. So.
I thought it was just the luck of the draw on the bucking horses.
I'm telling you, it is. That first day draw of the grand entry is almost just as important. You know?
Well, and you're there with all the crowd. When you get off and like stick the landing, you jump off your horse, and the crowd goes crazy, and you know it's a high score. I mean, is the adrenaline just pumping?
It is, and I've only stuck one landing in 8 years, and it was my very first NFR, and I've never been able to recreate it, but the feeling is really good, and yeah, it's almost like you don't know what to do with your hands, and you know, and you just kind of, you're so excited, and you just yell, and I never knew why Heath Demoss did his little pirouette and spin thing that he always did, and I get it now. He's just really excited, and that's how he expresses it, and like I said, I usually yell or something like that, but it is. It's a great feeling, and it's really cool to be down in the arena after a tough bronc ride. And as a bronc rider, you know when it goes good, and so you're fired up. And I mean, that's what we work for. So it's kind of nice to kind of all have it bubbled into one moment.
Well, it's been a moment or two here with you. Any last thoughts on rodeo, your career, and where you see yourself going?
You're looking at it now. I think we've got a few more years of this. I think it's my wife and I really enjoy the lifestyle of the travel and everything. Now our little boy's only 1 year old. He seems to have no complaints. So we're gonna keep riding this wagon until he wants to start rodeoing, and then that'll probably be what I think I'll hold up good enough. I'm only 30, so but I mean, whenever that little boy turns about 6 or 7 and he wants to start playing cowboy, I think that'll be whenever it's just All right, now I'm cheering instead of getting on. So,
what if he looks at you and goes, "Dad, I want to be a baseball player."
Hey, let's start going play baseball, dude. And we'll do whatever we need to do. You tell me where you want to put the diamond out in the pasture, and we'll get everything set up. Like, it does not matter. If he wants to be an engineer, lawyer, it don't. What do you want to do, brother? And we'll make it happen. So, well, yeah, we're excited.
Maybe a few little brothers or sisters for him too.
You have to talk to my wife. That's no comment on any of that. Yeah. He's only one. We just got normal.
I love it. Well, Jacobs, you are always a treat to talk to. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it, my friend.
You're welcome, Maria.
World champion saddle bronc rider Jacobs Crawley right here on NFR Extra, where it's all dirt, all rodeo, all year. Thanks for joining us.
Vegas awaits, so book your hotel now at nfrexperience.com. Follow the NFR Extra podcast by visiting nfrexperience.com, nfrextra.vegas, and now on Spotify.
Hi, I'm world champion bull rider Sage Kimsey, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
Hi, I'm two-time world champion Tim O'Connell, and this is NFR Extra.
Hello, everyone. This is Benji Bendeley, Wrangler National Finals Rodeo Music Director, and this is NFR Extra.
Hi, I am Benny Butler, and you're listening to NFR Extra.
That is it for episode 5 of NFR Extra.
Envy, we want to give a big thank you to our guest on the show, Mr. Randy Corley, for joining us on the Rodeo News of the Week, and Mr. Flint Rasmussen, inside and outside the barrel, for sharing way more than we expected to get on the show.
Yeah, it was. It didn't seem like it was going to happen like that.
It came out.
Though, right? Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely outside of the barrel. And as always, we thank Maria Prekagies and her guests, world champ and PRCA contestant director, Jacobs Crawley. Good luck on the road, Jacobs.
Join us in 2 weeks when Maria talks to 8-time world champion Donnie Gay and also Mr. Bob Tallman for the show Bo's Bull and Rodeo News of the Week and lots more.
Those are some heavy hitters right there, those guys. And Donnie's never short on words. I noticed that.
So. You called short. You said short.
I didn't say that. See you later.
Gotta make it out to Vegas, where the big boys roam, with the rovers and the racers and the bulls and the browns, and the ladies in the skin-tight wranglers and the cowboy.